Hello, Texas, America, the world. This is Mark Gancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today by Barrett Tillman, author of Clash of the Carriers, the true story of the Marianas turkey shoot of World War II. This chronicles the greatest aircraft carrier battle of all time. It started in earnest 63 years ago, exactly. And as we talk about this with Barrett Tillman today, I want to put in a plug for his other book that he discussed with us on February 28th on this show, entitled LeMay, the story of General Curtis Emerson LeMay, the father of the Strategic Air Command. That publication, of course, is a Palgrave Macmillan issuance and is a part of the Great General series. A fascinating book, LeMay, and so is this book, Clash of the Carriers. And as we talk about Barrett Tillman, there are all kinds of things that I could say about him. He has a biography that is on Wikipedia. He was born in 1948. As of 2007, he has published 36 books and some 500 articles, specializes in naval aviation topics, focusing upon history, biography, and autobiography, in addition to fiction and technical writing. He has also sold an as yet unproduced screenplay. And as you read through this biography, it is so comprehensive, we could spend the entire time literally covering what Wikipedia has to say about Barrett Tillman. And you can find his website as well, by the way, at btillman.com. That is btillman.com. And in regard to this book, Clash of the Carriers, I'd simply like to quote what Richard Frank says about it, the author of both Guadalcanal and Downfall. He says, "Superb. The greatest naval air battle of all time finally receives the meticulous and comprehensive treatment it deserves." That could be an understatement in regard to the magnitude of what Barrett Tillman covers in this volume, which again is 348 pages long. And we're going to engage him in conversation, minus the commercial breaks, for approximately 1 hour this morning. Barrett, how are you, sir?
Doing quite well, Mark. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, so thank you for having me back.
Well, it's a pleasure not only to chat with you, but to sit down and to in a methodical, leisurely fashion to read your books. I enjoyed LeMay so much, particularly since my father knew him and worked for him, and I have not been disappointed at all in Clash of the Carriers. It has enabled me to encounter the Marianas in ways that I never have before. I passed by the subject briefly in history in school, at the hands of Captain R.C. Slate of the U.S. Navy, who in those days led the American History Department at Iolani High School in Honolulu. So I knew a little bit about the Marianas, but of course your book really gets into the depths of this. And in regard to the listeners, where do you think we ought to begin there in terms of understanding the historical significance of what began 63 years ago today?
Well, probably a good start as any is December 8th, 1941, on that side of the dateline, which, of course, was the start of the Pacific War. And at that time, the United States owned, or rather had control of, part of the Marianas, most particularly Guam, as a result of dispersing some German territories after the First World War. And there was never any intention of defending the Marianas because they were so much closer to Japan than to the United States. But Guam and Saipan were fairly important waypoints in the Pacific as far as places where shipping could stop while crossing the world's largest ocean.
And we'll be back with Barrett Tillman, the author of Clash of the Carriers, when Mark Gancos America returns live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Turn to Barrett's webpage while we're talking this morning. You can find it at www.btillman.com. Stay tuned.
The ideology powering the Democrats and Republicans is not liberalism or conservatism, but globalism. Globalists are concerned with what's good for big business and the American empire instead of what's fair for the American people. The only antidote to the poison of globalism is nationalism. Start reading the Nationalist Times each month. The Nationalist Times promotes a common sense, intelligent, and passionate alternative to the reigning party line. Published monthly since 1985, the Nationalist Times is a 20-page newspaper featuring outstanding writers and columnists who don't believe in taboos or sacred cows. Be one of the many thousands of loyal readers of the Nationalist Times. Subscribe now to the Nationalist Times. Just $19 for 1 year. That's 50% off the regular price. Send your $19 subscription to the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. That's the Nationalist Times, P.O. Box 426, Allison Park, PA 15101. Or subscribe online at our website, www.anu.org.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits, no increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Mark and Faust America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We are joined today by Barrett Tillman, who was with us on the 28th of February to discuss his book on General Curtis Emerson LeMay, entitled appropriately LeMay. That is an offering of the Palgrave Macmillan Great General Series. And you can find it at Barnes & Noble, at Borders, at Amazon.com, and so forth and so on. But today on this 63rd anniversary of the beginning of the Marianas Campaign and the clash between the United States and Japan that was literally the most spectacular aircraft carrier battle in history. We're talking about Barrett's book, Clash of the Carriers. And let's pick it up where we left off, Barrett. Go ahead in terms of the significance of this campaign.
Well, if you look at a map of the Central Pacific, you see that Guam and Saipan lie directly south of Tokyo, about 1,500 miles, and therein lies the main attraction of taking the Marianas back from the Japanese. because when the campaign kicked off in June of 1944, the B-29 campaign had been underway from China, or was just about to get started in China, and the logistics of supporting the world's most modern, most sophisticated bomber from the China theater were such that General LeMay, as we discussed before, eventually determined that the best way to make use of that spectacular weapon was, in fact, from Mariana's bases. So both the United States Pacific Command and the Naval General Staff in Tokyo realized that the Marianas were the key to defending what was left of the Japanese Empire, and consequently, we wanted it. We sent the 5th Fleet and the United States Marine Corps and a couple of Army divisions to take Guam and Saipan and Tinian back from the Japanese, and that meant that the Imperial Navy, which had not been in a fleet action since late 1942, had no choice but to come out and fight.
Yes, and in regard to the implications of this battle, certainly one of the things that I picked up on as far as doing a cursory inspection of the history of this campaign before reading your book was this whole business of just getting an overview of the situation. I noticed the Scripps Institution of Oceanography at the University of California, San Diego, has quite an article on the Marianas, and again, it emphasizes the fact that the outcome of this campaign, particularly with the acquisition of Guam and Tinian, enabled the Army Air Corps to ratchet this thing up to the next level in regard to the overall aviation assault on Japan. Militarily speaking, is that probably the most significant thing to come out of this?
Yes, it was, because let's remember that, among other things, the B-29s that dropped atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki both took off from the Marianas, so there was simply no doubt that the Marianas airfields that LeMay commanded were going to have a direct bearing upon the conduct of the rest of the war against the Japanese, and that even would have included the worst case scenario scheduled for November 1945 with Operation Downfall, which would have been the start of the amphibious conquest of the Japanese islands, and most of the invasion troops that would have been involved in that would have been based either in the Marianas, the Philippines, or Okinawa. So Guam, Saipan, Tinian loom large in the Pacific scheme of things from 44 onward.
Yes, and I think it's noteworthy in regard to this whole thing, Barrett. You mentioned the fact that when we speak about several of these islands, we're talking about a 1,500-mile range basically between these islands and the Japanese homeland. I noted in this article on the Marianas that the University of California, San Diego had put out that the new American B-29 had a 2,800-mile flying range, and of course that gave the Army Air Corps an additional 1,300 miles of leeway to work with in regard to making these trips to and from the islands in the context of these Japanese air raids.
Yes, that's exactly right. The B-29 was designed as the first what we would today call intercontinental bomber. It actually lacked the range to fly with a useful bomb load, say from the U.S. to Europe and back, but at least with bases in say northern Canada or Newfoundland, Iceland, it could have done that. And that, in fact, was what Boeing and the Army Air Force had in mind when the B-29 project began, just about the time of the Second World War in Europe, because it looked as if Britain was, in fact, in danger of falling, and had that occurred, then obviously the United States would not have had any bases close enough to Europe to prosecute the war on its own.
Well, in regard to this whole situation, as near as I can tell, and you're the expert in this, I'm not clearly, which is why you're on the show, when it comes to the Marianas campaign, it seems that the invasion of Saipan, which took place 63 years ago, beginning this June 15th, that in regard to the Marianas campaign, the American invasion of Saipan really seems to be absolutely pivotal to the rest of what took place. There apparently then followed 24 days of combat. In regard to these, to the invasion of Saipan, unpack for us a little bit, if you will, the military and the human dimensions of what transpired in that invasion.
Well, Saipan, of course, was primarily desired for its airfields, and there were also Japanese airfields operating on Guam, and eventually we built them on Tinian. In fact, I think the Enola Gay took off from Tinian rather than Guam or Saipan. But in the Fifth Fleet, which Admiral Raymond Spruance brought to the Marianas, you had an unprecedentedly large, vastly capable mobile striking arm that composed not only 15 fast aircraft carriers, that is, those capable of making 30 knots, but you had 7 or 8 battleships, in all something over 100 warships, including destroyers and cruisers, just in Task Force 58 alone. And then with Admiral Turner's amphibious forces, you had dozens of attack transports, supply ships, escorts. Then there was also an aggressive submarine campaign supporting the American effort. So, yeah, that was just a war on an industrial scale that cannot even be conceived of anymore. War has, we might say, on that level, priced itself out of business, especially today when something like a B-2 stealth bomber goes for an admitted $2 billion with a B, dollars, and that's more than a lot of small warships. On the Japanese side, the situation was somewhat more complex because even though we talk about inter-service rivalry, and it certainly does exist in the United States, in Tokyo in the 1940s, inter-service rivalry was practically a full-contact sport. The Japanese Army and the Navy did not have much regard for each other. The Navy, in fact, resented the Army's aggressive policies in China, which drew the entire country into war with a Western alliance, and that, with which Japan simply could not compete. But the immediate defense of the Marianas was in the hands of the Japanese Army. They had a couple of corps-sized units there, a number of divisions. And, of course, it was up to the Japanese Navy to keep the remote islands supplied, even though there was a time in World War II when the Japanese Army had its own shipping and, in fact, even its own submarines, as peculiar as that may sound. And oddly enough, the Japanese Army submarine school was at a port called Hiroshima. And the reason the Japanese Army had submarines was that they found they could not rely upon the Navy to keep bypassed Army garrisons supplied in the Central Pacific. So I mention that just to demonstrate the frequently antagonistic and even convoluted relationship between the two major services in Japan. But the Navy had rebuilt to a large extent from its losses in 1942, especially those suffered at Midway and Guadalcanal, and they were able to send 9 aircraft carriers to the defense of the Marianas against the 15 that the Americans had. So between them, those 24 carriers still represent the greatest concentration of flat tops that have ever fought each other, and obviously that will never happen again.
Well, you know, that was the thing that struck me in reading your book, Barrett, this whole way in which the carrier configuration between the United States and Japan had basically been reversed from what it was apparently at the Battle of Midway, where, of course, because of what had happened to us at Pearl Harbor, we were basically operating with what, Yorktown, Enterprise, and Hornet.
Yeah.
And Yamamoto had more carriers at that point than we did in June of 1942. And yet by the time we get to June of 1944, the situation is reversed. And we'll maybe pick up with that when we come back. This is Mark Antos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Back with Barrett Tillman. Clash of the Carriers. Stay tuned.
Catholic priest calls on Catholics and Christians to resist an unjust attack against Iran. Father John Martinez, a Catholic priest, speaks out to declare the Catholic Church's true teaching, that it would be a mortal sin for Catholic soldiers to attack Iran. In a one-hour lecture, Father John Martinez warns about the Jewish plot to rule the world and to use the United States to ignite the flames of World War III by its satanic plan to unjustly attack Iran. He exposes that George Bush is Jewish and how Congress is controlled by the Jews. Father John Martinez gravely warns of nuclear weapons being used by the United States and the threat of the possible end of the world. For additional information on how you can help stop World War III, order Father John Martinez's CD entitled An Unjust Attack on Iran, available for $10 by Father John Martinez. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for the address.
I found this company online, and they had this really unique variety of salt wellness products. I read some of the articles and ended up ordering this beautiful salt lamp. According to the company, they said that the salt crystal lamps gently purify indoor air. I was so amazed. I put it in the baby's room, and it made a perfect nightlight. Both my husband and I could tell the difference.
SoleWellness.com is a unique company that offers salt wellness products from around the world.
So, I went back to the site and ordered their Soleil Simple Natural Cleaning Products, also made with Himalayan salt. I figured it would clean really well. The natural cleaning products worked wonderfully, and there was no scent. This company has so many products my whole family can enjoy and feel better with. Plus, the service was great.
If you're interested in natural, homeopathic, time-tested remedies, visit SoleilWellness.com. That's S-O-L-A-Y Wellness.com. Or call 312-224-2710. 312-224-2710.
PersonalArms.com has all your self-defense needs. PersonalArms.com carries the highest quality law enforcement grade pepper spray and sells it at true wholesale prices that start at $6.95. Check out our new electronic barking dog alarm. This electronic watchdog sees through walls. Electronic barking dog alarm works when an intruder comes within 15 feet. The barking dog alarm will begin barking like a true-to-life angry German Shepherd. The closer the intruder comes, the more frequent and more threatening the barking becomes. You can purchase stun guns, stun batons, pepper spray, telephone voice changers, martial arts instructional DVDs, and the same tasers that you have seen the police use on TV and more at www.personalarms.com/RBN. That's www.personalarms.com/RBN. Or call 1-201-641-1442. Don't be afraid anymore. Receive a free pepper spray by mentioning RBN when you place your online order. We will not sell items prohibited by any state, county, or local law, so check your laws before making a purchase.
We're back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're with military historian and author Barrett Tillman today. If you go back in the RBN archives and look at the show from February 28th, you will find that I had a conversation with Barrett about his book, LeMay, chronicling the life of General Curtis Emerson LeMay, the father of the Strategic Air Command. That book, LeMay, by Barrett Tillman, is a part of the Great General series, issued by Palgrave Macmillan. That volume is well worth your time. So is this one, Clash of the Carriers, the true story of the Marianas turkey shoot of World War II. We're having this conversation with Barrett today because this marks, this month, the 63rd anniversary of this incredible conflict that involved the greatest clash of aircraft carriers in all of history. And just quoting from the prologue of the book, talking about Admiral Nimitz of Fredericksburg, Texas. The Pacific Commander-in-Chief was another Texan, but not a general. From his headquarters in Hawaii, Sink Pack, Admiral Chester W. Nimitz had provided Admiral Raymond A. Spruance with all that his 5th Fleet needed for Operation Forager. 127,000 Marines and GIs and 535 ships and landing craft. 4.5 divisions were expected to overwhelm some 60,000 Japanese on Saipan. With the Marianas again in American hands, Tokyo would fall within range of B-29s. And then to quote again from that prologue on page 2, to defend the Marianas, the Japanese combined fleet was committed to an all-or-nothing endeavor. Barrett, unveil that one a little bit for us. The Japanese combined fleet was committed to an all-or-nothing endeavor. Did they see this as a Japanese version of Custer's last stand?
Well, probably the Japanese version of Custer's last stand would have been the invasion of the Japanese home islands. But the Marianas were just about the next thing to it because, as we've noted, the view from Tokyo, if you're looking south along about the 140th meridian, is that once the Marianas are in American hands, the progress of the war is irrevocably lost for Tokyo, because they have already seen over the previous 2 years, as you noted, since the Battle of Midway in June of 42, the continual attrition of their naval, land, and air forces. And at the time of the invasion of Saipan in Operation Forager, the numerical difference alone was enough to settle the issue. But I've always said that the Japanese were triple damned because they were not only outnumbered, but they were outnumbered by superior equipment operated by more experienced, much better trained individuals. And the comparison I always make is that a typical U.S. naval aviator going into combat for the first time in the middle of 1944 probably had between 500 and 600 hours of flight time, including at least a couple of hundred hours in whatever airplane he flew in combat. And his Japanese counterpart would have been lucky to have half that much. And relatively few of them did. In fact, I had addressed that matter in one of the chapters in Clash of the Carriers, showing the steady decline in the state of training of the Japanese Navy and its aviators. So it's simply a descending spiral from which there's no recovery.
Well, you know, in terms of that, in getting into some of the political dimensions of this, and again, I'm not a World War II historian as you are, but it's always amazed me, for example, in visiting the Nimitz Museum in Fredericksburg, Texas, and looking at that big electronic map that they have up there, which gives people an overview of the basic campaigns of the Pacific. You know, at one level, it seems that Guadalcanal and Coral Sea began the American recovery after Pearl Harbor. Certainly many people see Midway as the decisive turning point in the Pacific theater. And then at a third level, maybe we need to see this Marianas campaign as the absolute last straw in guaranteeing what in retrospect looks obvious subsequent to the Battle of Midway. But after the Marianas campaign was completed and the United States was in possession of these islands within 1,500 miles range of the Japanese homeland, with what began to follow in regard to the magnitude of LeMay's airstrikes against the homeland against the Japanese homeland, why, in your judgment, was the political decision not reached at a much earlier stage on the part of the Japanese government to throw the towel in?
That's primarily because the essentially the Japanese army was running the political show in Tokyo, as it had been since before the war. Remember that up until shortly after the Marianas campaign, the head of government, as opposed to head of state, was an army general, Hideki Tokyo. And the loss of the Marianas was such that it forced him and his cabinet to step down. But from a practical viewpoint, it really made no difference in the further conduct of the war, because the Japanese military and the Japanese government was determined to die gloriously, and that's the way they chose to interpret the firebombing of Tokyo in early 45.
Yes, General LeMay's great victory in March of 1945, just an incredible campaign, which of course you describe in that book, LeMay. We'll be back with Barrett Tillman. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio on RBN. Check out Barrett's website at btillman.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49? Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. The J. Michael Stevens Group is shipping a lot of storable food. It's smart that you're getting going at your food supplies. 1 week after the report came out that the world had eaten more food than it produced last year, the country turned into a deep freeze, wiping out a huge part of the new crop. An example? In 24 hours, clementine oranges doubled in price. If you intend to start or finish your supply, call immediately. When you call, tell them how many adults and how many years of food you need. When there are shortages, missing items will be substituted, maintaining the quantity of food necessary. Money is not the problem. Availability is. Be careful. When food supplies get short, with no future, many retailers ship real trash to supply you. For safe food you can trust, call 800-409-5633 on the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
This is Mark Pankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're joined today on the 63rd anniversary of the Great Battle of the Marianas by Barrett Tillman, the author of Clash of the Carriers, the true story of the Marianas turkey shoot of World War II. He is also the author of LeMay for the Palgrave Macmillan Great General series. And Barrett Tillman's book, I want to tell you folks, is an absolute gem, and I want to personalize this by saying among the many things that I enjoyed reading in this book, I came across an incredible photograph that has some degree of personal relevance for me. A number of years ago, when I was doing my postgraduate work at Westminster Theological Seminary in Philadelphia, and I'm still trying to finish that in terms of my theological German exam and my thesis, going to reengage with that this summer from right here in San Antonio, I was working as a security officer for a retirement community up there in suburban Philadelphia. And one time there was an elderly man who called me on the telephone. He needed some assistance one night, and so I went to his apartment. I don't even remember why he called me there. I think he was having a leaky faucet or something like this. And I ended up discovering some things about this guy. I saw this in one of the rooms of his apartment, a presidential citation on the wall. And as I was reading this presidential citation, I discovered something about this guy in whose presence I was at that time. This fellow's name was Daniel Sadler Jr. As it turns out, he was a Navy dive bomber pilot on the USS Lexington CV-16 in World War II. He was one of two people, the other the former head of the Air and Space Museum at the Smithsonian in World War II. Mr. Sadler was one of two people, along with this gentleman from the Smithsonian, who were credited by presidential citation with delivering the key hits that sunk the Japanese aircraft carrier Zuikaku at the Battle of Leyte Gulf, which Barrett Tillman spends quite a bit of time discussing in his book, Clash of the Carriers. And if you look at the many fine things that are in Barrett's book, the photos in the middle of the volume are absolutely essential. And I came across this photo, United States Navy photo, via the National Museum of Naval Aviation, and it shows the Zuikaku, the last survivor of the six carriers that attacked Pearl Harbor. In this strike photo during TF-58's attack on June 20th, the Zuikaku is bracketed by two bombs off the bow and one off the starboard quarter, but is smoking from a direct hit. She succumbed to American air power at Leyte Gulf. One of the two people responsible for putting the Zuikaku to the bottom of the ocean was my old friend Daniel Sadler Jr., of Flower Town, Pennsylvania, was on the USS Lexington CV-16. Mr. Sadler has subsequently passed away of prostate cancer, but we used to talk all the time once I found out who he was about things. He'd drop by after dinner and chat with me at the desk, and he gave me all kinds of personal reminiscences about the Second World War that I'll never forget. And looking at Barrett's book, there it is, a photograph of the actual sinking of the Zuikaku. And due to circumstances known only to God, many, many years later, I happened to personally encounter one of the two men responsible for that great victory over that Japanese aircraft carrier, which was the last of the six that attacked us at Pearl Harbor that appropriately found its way to the bottom of the ocean, in regard to the reversal of the Japanese fortunes at Leyte Gulf. And that's just one of the many reasons why I enjoyed reading Barrett Tillman's book. But even for those of you who don't have a personal connection to these events, you'll find the history that is discussed in this volume to be absolutely essential reading. This book is not simply comprehensive. I would describe it as being spellbinding. Barrett, in regard then to your book, you talk a little bit about Admiral Raymond Spruance, who, of course, was very much responsible for our, well, among many people, was responsible for our victory at Midway in 1942. He later rises to the command of the 5th Fleet in 1944. Share with us your perspectives on Admiral Spruance in regard to his personality and his capabilities and why he was such a key figure in this whole situation.
Well, Raymond Spruance was widely considered one of the brightest officers in the U.S. Navy. And in the book, Clash of the Carriers, I make the point that in 1944, he began alternating operations as head of Fifth Fleet with Vice Admiral, or then Full Admiral, William F. Bull Halsey's Third Fleet. And you could not find two less similar naval officers wearing the same uniform. Halsey was aggressive, pugnacious, much more of a fighter than a thinker, whereas Spruance was a cool, calm, rational master of risk assessment. And as far as their personalities are concerned, I think it's instructive that Halsey went out of his way to host war correspondents and after the war wrote a splashy memoir, whereas when Spruance appeared on the cover of Time magazine, he left the copy face down in his quarters and was never seen to be reading it, and he certainly never wrote a memoir, unfortunately. But very much a big picture type of operator who was accomplished at delegating authority to his subordinates, whom he chose carefully in concert with Admiral Nimitz, who commanded the entire Pacific Fleet. So I would say, to a large extent, Ray Spruance was the right admiral in the right place at the right time.
Yeah, and I found it striking in terms of the picture of him that appears in the midway point of your book. The brief caption is quite insightful. You say that his uncommon intellect and calm demeanor often appeared to be at odds with aggressive airmen, but he never lost a battle. Are we to somehow see his personality as somewhat unique among Navy admirals, particularly in terms of this reference to calm demeanor?
Well, at the four-star level, especially in the Pacific Theater, obviously that's a small club. At this time, you have Nimitz, who will receive his fifth star at year-end. But among those full admirals, those wearing four stars, Spruance and Halsey are the primary players, at least as far as those who were taking the war to the enemy. And Spruance, as I just noted, was never a chest thumper. He was not a self-aggrandizer in contrast to Halsey. But Spruance had, ironically or not, gained his early aviation exposure by running the what's called the screen, that is, the cruisers and the destroyers that escorted Halsey's carriers, primarily the USS Enterprise, in a series of operations in the first half of 1942. So even though Spruance was what they called a black shoe, that is, a non-aviator, and in those days aviators wore sporty brown shoes, he had seen carrier operations up close for months on end, and he had absorbed the doctrine. He had an excellent staff to advise him on aviation matters, and it just proved to be a happy combination.
Yes, and my first acquaintance with this guy, historically, believe it or not, came as a result of watching Charlton Heston and Henry Fonda in their movie, The Battle of Midway, and I remember specifically that Robert Mitchum played Spruance. I mean, I'm sorry, I played Halsey.
Yes.
And, of course, Halsey was beached for the Battle of Midway because of a skin disease. And the movie depicted the way in which Glenn Ford, who played Spruance, ended up being selected to selected as an aircraft carrier commander for Midway, even though up to that point he had been a so-called cruiser skipper. That apparently Halsey saw some things in Spruance that told him that in regard to the latter's ability to command aircraft carriers as far as tactical strategy, that he was the person for the job. He sold Nimitz on the idea. Nimitz apparently was able to get Washington to go along with it. And certainly the selection of Spruance would seem to have changed the course of American naval history, not simply with Midway, but later with his command of the Fifth Fleet.
Yeah, that's certainly true. If Spruance had not been available, it's kind of hard to envision who might have taken his position. Perhaps it would have been three-star at that time, Vice Admiral Willis Lee, who commanded the battleship task force that escorted the carrier striking arm, Task Force 58. But Spruance was, in my opinion, such a rare commodity that his value was recognized early on, and he had very good working relationships with Admiral Nimitz, Cinque Pack, who commanded the entire Pacific Fleet, and in fact, after Midway, had served, I think, over a year as chief of staff for Cinque Pack. So Spruance had a terrific grounding, not just in fleet operations, but in grand strategy and overall war aims.
Yes, and in regard to this whole business of strategy, I noticed last night when I was going through the appendices of your book once more, Appendix A has a complete compendium of the entire composition of Spruance's Fifth Fleet with all of the individual task forces that were a part of the Fifth Fleet. And then Appendix B talks about the Imperial Japanese Navy with a laundry list of all of the individual forces that were involved in that with their individual commanders. And then, of course, in Appendix C, there's a very fine glossary there. Appendix D gives us a laundry list of summaries of the basic American aircraft that were involved in this. Appendix E does the same thing for the Japanese. Appendix F gets into air combat claims on June 19th with scores and so forth and so on. In this whole situation, as the average layperson in military matters, which includes me, starts wading through this kind of data, how should we see in overview form the basic strategy of each side, American and Japanese, as this whole thing began to unfold with the American invasion of Saipan in regard to both the utilization of the Marines as well as the Navy? Just a basic summation of how the battle unfolded.
Well, let me step back just a little bit and say that the Marianas campaign has been aptly described as the other D-Day because it came less than 2 weeks after the invasion of Normandy and on June 6th on the opposite side of the world. And to consider the magnitude of the Marianas operation, just think that the Fifth Fleet sortied from fairly far-flung bases, you know, from Hawaii to the Admiralties and elsewhere, and they were between 1,500 and 2,000 miles from their objective, the Marianas. Now, contrast that with the larger forces that were mustered in southern and eastern England a couple of weeks before. The longest distance any of those ships went was less than 100 miles. And, of course, the straight line distance was, well, I'll take it back, it was a little over 100 miles. But basically, you have the Allied forces crossing the English Channel to make the most significant amphibious operation of the European and African theaters. And then you have approximately 1,500 miles just to get to the fight in the Pacific. So that sets the stage as far as the difference of scale. With the attack going ashore on Saipan, joint operations again, obviously the Navy takes the Marines and the Army to the fight, and it's up to the infantrymen once they get above the high tide mark. And it's a separate issue from what I address in the book because I'm focused on the naval aspects, but there was serious Army and Marine Corps rivalry ashore in the Marianas, and it led to the dismissal of the commanding general of an Army division who was not able to push his troops far enough, fast enough. So there's always an inter-service rivalry component to this story, and I've already alluded to how seriously it was taken in Japan.
Yes, absolutely. And in regard to your book, and again, there is so much data in this book, there's no way that it is possible, as I've already said to the listeners, to cover this in an hour. This is just the beginning of the conversation. I'm urging everyone to get a copy of this book. I have my own copy. It is well worth your time. But as I was looking at all of the data in it, I read the whole thing through once and then subsequently have gone back through some of the individual pages and have made little notes in the margins. I noticed in the acknowledgments on page 324 that there are a list of Marianas veterans there. Now, two names leaped out at me. One was Lieutenant Zenji Abe, the Japanese dive bomber pilot. I met him a number of years ago, back in the early 90s, when he was at the Nimitz Museum in Fredericksburg. Very nice gentleman. We had an interesting conversation. I listened to a lecture that he delivered in the Texas Hill Country at that time. There's another name that is listed among these Marianas veterans in your acknowledgments section, and that is one Lieutenant Commander Gerald R. Ford, who was on the Monterey. Did you talk to Ford in regard to the development of this book, and what were some of his personal reminiscences about this whole situation in his life?
I did not talk to President Ford, but I had some correspondence with him through his office in California, and in fact I had offered his chief of staff the opportunity to write the foreword to the book, but at that time Mr. Ford was, I think he was 90 at that time, and in declining health, and of course he died last year. So I considered myself fortunate to have the personal reminiscences that I quote in the book, because he was there that night of June 20th watching the return of what became known as the Mission Beyond Darkness, that long-range attack against the retreating Japanese carriers, and he provides a fascinating view of what that was like.
Yes, and again, I think that whether we're talking about Gerald R. Ford or Lieutenant Zenji Abe on the Japanese side, or my old friend Dan Sadler up in Flowertown, Pennsylvania, who was flying off the USS Lexington, that we continue to return to some of the human dimensions of this entire situation when it comes not simply to the Marianas campaign of World War II, but the whole issue of combat generally and the memories that people have of these things that remain with them throughout their temporal lives. When we come back, I'll take a caller from Georgia. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We're with Barrett Tillman today, author of Clash of the Carriers, and also the book LeMay from Palgrave Macmillan. Stay tuned.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
In the United States, it is now estimated that over 90% of family income is now being used to pay back consumer debt. Because of financial problems, mostly from credit card debt, approximately 1 in 4 families struggle to pay bills on even basic necessities such as mortgage, food, and utilities. And with millions of people desperately searching for a fresh start, North American Educational Services is here to help you regain your financial independence. We are very proud that the Debt Relief Educational Services Program has helped over 8,100 families nationwide since 1998, eliminating over $215 million of credit card debt, and still counting, and enabled clients to stop monthly payments immediately. The NAES program is unique, designed to help you, the consumer, not your creditors. To take back your financial freedom, call 1-888-245-7097. That's 1-888-245-7097. Or visit www.integritydebtoptions.com.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
We're back. This is Mark Danfoss, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network on this 63rd anniversary of the beginning of the Battle for the Marianas, the clash, the greatest clash involving aircraft carriers in history. We're joined by Barrett Tillman, author of Clash of the Carriers. He is also the author of the new book on Curtis LeMay, entitled appropriately LeMay. That is a Palgrave Macmillan offering as a part of their Great General series. And the gems in Clash of the Carriers are just beyond calculation. I underlined this when I read Barrett's latest book. He's talking about Admiral Spruance. And he says, greatest of Spruance's strengths was risk assessment. If he lacked Bull Halsey's headlong damn the torpedoes attitude, neither did he ever commit a serious error, something that cannot be said of William F. Halsey. Spruance summarized his philosophy thusly, quote, "I believe that making war is a game that requires cold and careful calculation. It might be a very serious thing if we turned the wrong way just once," unquote. I'll editorialize and say that I wish that Admiral Spruance had been running military operations in this present situation that we're in the Middle East, but that's a topic for another show. Ted in Georgia, you're on the line for Barrett Tillman. Go ahead, Ted.
Yes. Back in on June the 14th, 1944, I believe is when he said that battle started, I was a high school student. I was 13 months later, I was a lowly seaman aboard an attack transport, APA 143, that was scheduled to invade Japan. And I happened to be in my ship was in San Francisco, and I have a very definite memory of the newspaper there on approximately July the 15th, 1945, stating that the Japanese were desperately trying to surrender.
This was on the 15th of June? This I mean, 15th of July, I'm sorry, 15th of July.
Approximately. Now, I don't remember the date. I don't remember the exact date, but it was in July. And it was probably, I would just guess, between the 15th. It was circa the 15th. It was near the 15th.
Well, Barrett, I know that we're running out of time, but in terms of Ted's comment, I know that there's a lot of revisionist historical discussion today of what transpired in those final months before the Japanese finally did throw in the towel. What's your take on all of that? Why wasn't there the opportunity for the agreement on surrender terms in July of 1945?
Probably what Ted saw was the response to the Yalta Declaration that Harry Truman and Churchill and Stalin had issued, still calling for unconditional surrender of Japan. And the Japanese War Cabinet, which was still running the government in Tokyo, had tentatively accepted the Potsdam Declaration with certain reservations. And in essence, that meant that the emperor would stay on the throne, there would be no prosecution of war criminals, and no Allied occupation, and clearly that was unacceptable to the Allies.
I'd like to thank Barrett Tillman today for being on this show. You can find Barrett Tillman's website at btillman.com. He is the author of LeMay and also of Clash of the Carriers, the true story of the Marianas turkey shoot of World War II. Folks, you need this book. Go out and buy yourself a copy of it. And tomorrow I'll be with John Dominic Crossan of DePaul University, the author of God and Empire, Jesus Against Rome, Then and Now. This is Mark Dankoff signing off from San Antonio on RPN. Thanks again to Barrett Tillman. God bless you.
A message for all homeowners.